step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Final hour, Darren Dunnick and Chase, Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe here with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Elijah Campbell in our Hillside Medical Games Studios. We say hello and Happy New Year to Mitch Light from The Athletic. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm good, Darren. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, everything is good. Let's talk about the games that we all watched on Friday afternoon and Friday evening. Let's start with the Alabama and Cincinnati game. By the way, the Bearcats have learned that both of their running backs have declared for the draft. Jerome Ford
corner.
Declared, and then the corner, the cornerback, Ahmad Sauce Gardner, which you got to love that, has also declared for the draft. So two key players for them going to the NFL draft. Overall, how'd you think the Bearcats fared against Alabama?
It was sort of predictable, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's easy to say that looking back now that they proved they're a very good team that was not up to the task of beating Alabama. And we've seen that from a lot of number four seeds in this. You know, they needed to go, everything to go perfectly and to catch some breaks. What was it, a muffed punt? I forgot. There was some
muffed
fumble.
Punt.
Some
yep,
key point.
There was.
Yeah, whereas like if they jumped on it.
And they didn't capitalize,
like they,
yep.
Yeah, but they didn't do it, and you know it's tough to go into a game needing, like expecting, or I guess needing all the breaks to go your way to win the game. It's just not usually going to happen. You know, they played here's the way I like to look at sports a lot. If they played Alabama 10 times, how many times did Cincinnati beat them? Maybe once or twice, if that much. You know, Alabama played well. Their offensive line, which was an issue most of the year, highlighted in that Auburn game, has been very good the last two games. And, you know, they set the tone by running the ball early. I think that was intentional. I think the Todd Blackledge, the announcing crew, did a good job talking about, you know, Cincinnati's a good team. But one thing about most teams of that level, whether it's a mid-level Power 5 team or a really good Group of 5 team, even when they have their best team, they just don't have the depth that elite teams have. So it's twofold. You're running the ball on them. You're making their defense on a lot of plays. You're having success, but you're also wearing them down. So even if Cincinnati hung around more, and it was like a 7-point game in the fourth quarter, you just felt that they didn't have the depth and they were going to wear down. So it was just one of those where the final score might not have been as big of a blowout as some Alabama or SEC people thought, but it was clear watching that game that Alabama was the far superior team.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting for Alabama to come out and just try to cram it down their throat and just run all over them, and they did.
Yeah, it's funny you're watching that and you're on social media like most people are, wasn't? People are like, oh, you know, why would Alabama throw a pass? You know, every time they threw a pass, why would you throw a pass? Well, a lot of times that's how football works because you're running so well, that sets up the pass. You know, they are – Bill O'Brien's looking to score points. Nick Saban's looking to score points. Sure, they want to make a statement like I just said, but if they run the ball successfully 7 straight times and get 6 or 7 yards – I understand the school of thought where you run it again, but there's also the school of thought says, well, that 15-yard pass is going to be open too. Now there's also the, you just mentioned Sauce Gardner, they have a very good secondary, and Alabama was depleted at wide receiver, so Alabama took advantage of its strength and didn't necessarily play into Cincinnati's strength. I still believe that they could have thrown the ball a little bit more and better if they wanted to, but they just didn't need to.
Yeah, I honestly, and this will probably offend some Bearcats fans, I thought Cincinnati fared better than I thought they would. And that's maybe offensive to some, but I thought it would be less. I mean, Georgia-Michigan was more lopsided than Cincinnati and Alabama, and I would have never have thought that.
Yeah, I mean, that's not an unfair statement, Darren. You know, Cincinnati, it's difficult. You know, we saw them on the field against Notre Dame, and they looked the part. They beat Notre Dame that day, and they were better than Notre Dame, and they deserved all the accolades they got. But when you don't see a team play the week in and week out schedule that some of these other Power 5 teams play, it's difficult. Like, you could sit there and say, okay, I watched them get when they were fortunate to beat Tulsa, when there's some fluky plays at the end. But then you could say, okay, they pounded a really good Houston team. They pounded a really good SMU team. So that's why it's fun. That's why it's a fun matchup. You know, we want to see the best teams. Was Cincinnati the fourth best team in the country? Maybe, maybe not. But they played their way into that spot. And like we've seen so many other years, and like we always talk about, plug in another number four team there, Alabama was going to beat them too. So it wasn't a Cincinnati thing. It was a Alabama thing.
Chase knows because he's been privy to a group text that 3 weeks ago I made a bet with a mutual friend of ours that Georgia was, because he said, you know, Georgia didn't play anybody. They should be the four seed. And I said, Georgia's not going to be the four seed. They're going to win the national championship, and you need to start embracing that. And, of course, it created quite the text chain after that. So we have a wager on that, and it is more than just friendly. We've got a nice wager on that, and I've got Georgia. And I said that Alabama SEC championship game where everybody was piling on Georgia, I said this could be the best thing that ever happened to them, and I still feel that today. Now, with that being said, I also didn't think they were going to absolutely manhandle Michigan like they did, which makes me think even more that feeling that I had that the SEC championship game was a good thing for Georgia because of the way it played out on Friday.
Well, you know, that's why sports are great, because we just don't know. Well, evidently you did know, and you made a bet about it. But, you know, just Georgia was so good during the regular season. And they had as good of a regular season as we've seen, you know, Alabama, obviously, last year, too. But Georgia was so good. And then in one game where, I mean, this is revisionist history, but you can look back and say, okay, we get it. Alabama had to win that game to go to the playoff, where Georgia clearly didn't have to win that game. And things snowballed on him, and Stetson Bennett was put in some uncomfortable positions, and he clearly didn't play well. But the smart thing to do was sit back and say, okay, this Georgia team, and the argument that they didn't play anyone, I get it. It wasn't the most grueling of SEC slates, but they still played good teams week in and week out for the most part. That team was too good to just not, you know, show up in the playoff. And whether it was that's the best thing that happened to them, and they kind of regrouped for the playoffs, or they just shrugged it off, whatever the motivation was, we clearly saw that Georgia team against Michigan in what you alluded to, just a shockingly dominant performance. Now, I thought Georgia was going to win the game, but I wasn't, you know, thought it was, you know, wouldn't have been surprised if Michigan won, but it was funny because I was working, I had a writer at the first game, so I was editing and posting his story during the first quarter of the Michigan game, and every time I looked up, just Georgia was making a big play and had guys wide open, or Michigan was getting stuffed at the line of scrimmage. And so I didn't even, you know, by the time I turned it on, it was 14-0, and all the drama was taken out of that game. But just a extremely impressive performance by the Bulldogs.
Yep. So you know what side of the fence I'm on. You know where I'm leaning. Not leaning, where I've already declared who's going to win. Do you agree or disagree?
I don't know. I mean, that's, you know,
that is not an answer.
Hard hitting journalism right there, Mitch.
I don't know.
Well, you guys have
unacceptable
for a reason. I don't know, guys. Let's talk Tuesday morning and I'll let you know. I think I would pick Georgia right now. I think that.
Well, what's going to change? Why would you lean to, and what would change? What would change your mind from now until Monday?
Because that was the, you know, oh, what would change? I mean, what would change from the SEC championship game, or why would I change?
Well, you just said, I think I'll take, it's like, I think I'll take Georgia question mark.
Well, I just, you know, I haven't thought, I've thought about the game a lot, but I haven't really thought about who I would pick until you just asked me. So it's a great radio trick. I just kind of paused for about 2 or 3 minutes to collect my thoughts. And, you know, I think Georgia. I think Georgia's a little more diverse offensively with some of the injuries Alabama has. Here's a great, and I'm not enough of an X and O's guy to tell you why Alabama's offensive line played so well in the SEC championship game after struggling against Auburn. Maybe there's some things that Georgia can do up front to cause some problems to Alabama to get some pressure on Bryce Young. I love what Georgia, you know, seeing James Cook out of the backfield, the way they use their tight ends. Again, I think they're really diverse offensively. Now, Stetson Bennett is not as good as Bryce Young, but if he is, if they get a lead, now they had a 10-0 lead in the SEC championship game, so I don't want to contradict myself, but if they can play ahead and there's not pressure on Stetson Bennett, I think that's obviously a great spot. Now, Alabama is, despite some of their injuries, is more equipped to come from behind because of how good their quarterback is. So it's always, in a big game like this, it's always dangerous to go against the better quarterback, but I think Georgia's the more well-rounded team.
We're talking to Mitch Light of The Athletic. So win or lose, Mitch, where would you, in the jobs that Nick Saban has done as a head coach since he's been at Alabama, which yesterday, I guess, was the anniversary of his press conference. 15, yeah. So where would you put this coaching job compared to the rest with the team that he had this year?
You know, I don't want to insult any Alabama fans or Nick Saban fans. He's clearly the greatest college coach of our generation and probably of all time. But he still has the best or second best team in the country. You know, so, I mean, he's done a good job. The way they rallied against Auburn, and then let's say Georgia goes on to win the SEC champion, the national championship. You can say that SEC championship game performance is maybe the best coaching job of Nick Saban's, X amount of years, that one game. But if you follow recruiting, which you guys do enough, and you go to the 247 Sports Talent Composite, which just it's not recruiting rankings, it's overall roster, which includes transfers, click on it, the number one and two teams in the country are Georgia and Alabama. So it's no surprise they're playing for the national championship. I think Nick Saban's obviously a great coach, a great game coach, but what he's really good at is getting the best players in the country, so he's putting his program in this position every year. And even when, for whatever reason, it's not the best Alabama team of all time, they still have the second best roster in the country. And I got news for everyone, they're going to be much better next year. So he just continues to do an amazing job.
What do you think keeps him motivated? I mean, he's proven everything. Well, winning, sure, that's the easy answer, but I mean, he's done everything there is to do, yet he keeps doing it, and he shows no signs of slowing down, even at 70 years old.
I think certain people are just built certain ways, and not saying that you're not competitive or motivated, or I'm not, or Darren isn't, or Willie isn't, but some people are just built differently, and they have the skill to do it. They have the smarts to do it and the desire to do it. And once they taste it, they don't want to give it away. I mean, coaches, they all have big egos. They're incredibly driven. The successful ones are obviously very smart. It's just a combination of everything. And I think it's like with anything in life. It's like once you, as a fan of a team, do you not want the Braves to win this year again? Oh, they won it last year. Yeah,
right.
They won it last year. Okay, well, let's say when they're in a pennant race in September, if you care less, because they won it last year. Now, maybe that's the case to a small degree, but see what I'm getting at. It's just because you've done something once doesn't mean you don't want to do it again. And Nick Saban's just really, really, really good at what he does. And I don't know if I phrase this the right way. I think a lot of times it's the fear of failure. It's like once you've reached that spot, that pinnacle of the profession, the thought of not doing it is, more motivating almost than doing it. So, I mean, we can sit here and analyze it, and he's just very, very good, and he's at a place where he has all the, support, advantages, whatever you want to say. So it's just kind of a perfect storm of awesomeness.
To your point.
Best way to say it.
Yeah, and to your point, like if you're a fan of a team, I've been guilty of this. If the Braves lose in the NLCS this year, I'll be like, we won it last year. Like, that's fine. We got last year. Like, but he doesn't act that way. Like, that's not the coaching mentality. That's not the Saban mentality.
Right. That's what kind of separates certain people in this world. And it's not just sports. It's executives. It's just like
life. Yep. That's
right. Certain things are more important. And you know what? That's maybe your family or maybe the Division III coach out there loves what he does, loves ball just as much as Nick Saban, but his family, spending time with his family is maybe more important than being on the road recruiting, every day. It's just what makes people tick. And there's the top X percent of coaches in whether it's NFL, college, or whatever sport, they're wired differently, and he's clearly one of those guys.
How do you think Kirby is handling the pressure of not only coaching in a national championship game, but because he's got to face Alabama again, and he's got to face Nick Saban, who he hasn't beaten again? If it's Cincinnati, it's obviously different than the type of pressure of just going into a national championship game. But how do you think he's handling this, knowing who he's got to go up against?
That's a great question, and I don't know. I mean, if I'm not obviously close enough to the Georgia program, even though the people that cover it probably don't know. There's one school of thought that says he's just focusing on his team and he's blocking out all the noise, and yeah, he knows he's playing Alabama, but he just wants to win. And then there's another school of thought that says that's impossible. He knows what's going on. He knows he's lost Alabama. He knows the fourth and or third and 26 play, whatever it was, to Devontae Smith that cost him a national championship. So there's an added layer of pressure. But his job, no matter how much pressure he's feeling externally, internally, is not to let his players see that. Because if his players sense it, then it rubs off on him, on the team, and it can kind of create some not dread, just some negativity. He needs, because like a lot of the players, they know, but those guys, they weren't on that team that lost to Alabama. They don't. The burden isn't on them as much as like the program and the coach. So Kirby probably feels a lot of pressure, but he needs to be as free as possible for this game. But that's very difficult for these guys. We just talked about the dynamics of coaches and all that. A lot of them are very, very uptight, and they don't handle that pressure well. So that's definitely a fascinating subplot to this.
Has Stetson Bennett earned everyone's respect, or is there still going to be doubt with him?
I think there's going to be doubt. I just think there is the – it's difficult for us media fans to get past the walk-on part. Like, if you didn't know – if Stetson Bennett was a four-star recruit and was ranked 350th in the country coming out of high school, we wouldn't think anything of it. Like, Mac Jones was in that range there. Like, okay, he's not the five-star that Georgia usually brings in, but still a really good quarterback. But the fact that he's a walk-on and he, you know, sort of – he didn't really back into the job, but he kind of got the – both years he got the job, he's been playing. It's because other guys didn't play well. It was DeJuan Mathis last year and JT Daniels this year. So, you know what, though? I don't think Stetson Bennett really cares. He's had a great career at Georgia, you know, his in-state school. Now, if he goes out and outduels Bryce Young for a national championship, then he does, you know, he's still Stetson Bennett, the walk-on, but he's Stetson Bennett, the national championship quarterback.
Well, yeah, no, I don't know if he's going to outduel him, but Georgia's going to win.
Yeah, he might beat him. He probably won't outduel him, but he might beat him.
just saying, Mitch, just saying. Hey, good stuff. Yeah. Really appreciate it as always. In all seriousness, I do. I think I know probably the rest of the country doesn't feel that this way because they have SEC fatigue and Alabama fatigue and all that good stuff. I don't know how the ratings are going to be. I'll be curious to see, but certainly we're going to be very interested in these parts. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk about it next week.
Sounds good. Take care, guys.
All right. Mitch Light from The Athletic. Good stuff from him. We'll come back more on the other side as you listen to the DDC, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Mike Tomlin, with the Steelers win last night, becomes the first coach in NFL history to have a non-losing season in his first 15 seasons. No coach in NFL history has ever done that. Still think he's going to not be the coach next year?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, probably not. It would be his choice.
Probably not.
He's going to be the coach. I said all along I thought it'd be his choice. If he left or not, if he didn't want to do a rebuild without Ben.
Oh, but you also said that you think it may be his days are coming to an end in Pittsburgh.
Based on that, I think it would be his choice. That I've recognized the fact that the Rooneys don't fire anybody.
Why would he leave? I don't understand. Why would he leave?
I mean, have you not seen that happen before? Coaches get... I mean, we just watched a documentary on John Madden where he walked away. So, I mean, it certainly happens where it may just be at this point, do I really want to go through a rebuild or anything like that? I believe he'll be back. I'm wrong, but that was what I was saying.
Well, did you see his press conference on the USC job? I mean, he said he has the greatest job in sports.
He did.
Doesn't sound like a John Madden. I'm walking away. Mike Tomlin seems like a guy that's in for the long haul. That's what it looks like to me. With a great amount of respect, which I thought was interesting.
Got to figure out the QB, but.
Well, it was interesting how the whole Aaron Rodgers, they did ask him about Mike Tomlin and their relationship and the whole wink and, you know, what does that mean? I think what's interesting to me about the Aaron Rodgers situation is it seems like the longer this goes on, I'm starting to feel like they've come to their senses in Green Bay's front office and they have changed. They've done a 180. And they're basically, there's been a whole lot of smooching going on.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have the same vibe anymore. Like, Aaron's not taking little shots, little digs anymore. Have you noticed?
I've noticed. But here's the other thing. With guys like him, guys like Aaron Rodgers, do you think that if he went to a place where he's with all his buddies and everything's great, they're singing Kumbaya, he gets along with the front office? I'm asking this. I don't know. You know, do you get the same results? Or the fact that he's been pissed off for greatness the last handful of years and he has that chip on his shoulder of I'm going to show you, watch this. You know, I kind of think it works. I think that formula works of, you know, maybe he doesn't need to get along with everybody. And maybe he's realizing that of like, hey, yeah, I hate you and, you know, I'm tough to deal with, whatever. Let's go win a Super Bowl. Now, they got to do it, but they're in a pretty darn good position to do it this year. We'll see. We'll see what happens in the playoffs.
I think it's an interesting angle you're taking. You're basically saying, the way I gathered that question is, if none of this would have happened and he was just fat and content, and everybody was just always praising Aaron Rodgers, like, you're the greatest ever, would they have had this season and last season? Would he have had the same type of seasons as opposed to really angry, really motivated, and basically a your number one mentality, suck it, I'm going to win it, and then ride off into the sunset somewhere else, go help somebody else win? You're saying if he didn't have that, would the results be the same? I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
I think it's we'll never know the answer. Well, at least we're not going to right now during this discussion. But
and take nothing away from his talent, but everybody needs some sort of motivation. It's like
do.
I asked to Mitch, like what keeps Nick Saban motivated when he's done it all at this point? You know, not everybody's wired that way.
Well, no, nobody is. That's honestly, that's what sets him apart from everybody else.
Right.
That is the difference.
I'll push back. I think Brady is in that category. Because, like, what does Brady have what does Brady have left to prove?
I think you're talking about college coaches. I'm talking about people in the game.
I'm talking about that's – it's rare to find.
Well, yeah, Bill Belichick. We can name them.
Yeah.
Bill Belichick, Tom Brady.
Yep.
Michael Jordan.
Jordan was that way.
In
Jordan, you can put in the category of Rodgers of, you know, he hated –
Kobe Bryant.
Yeah. But Jordan hated, you know, hated management. And it was like, okay, let's go out there and just – let's win it one last time with the middle finger in the air as I run off the court. That's exactly what he did. Because I would say this, if Green Bay goes and wins the Super Bowl, I don't think it's completely far-fetched that Rodgers walks out on top and says, all right, peace. I got
like
my other ring.
Like his career?
Yeah. I don't think that's crazy.
I don't know.
He was asked about it the other day, and he said he has not ruled out retirement. I think, you know, how serious he was by that, who knows, but if you win the Super Bowl and he wins the MVP, which he's going to win the MVP, if he wins the Super Bowl, it's not crazy to think, okay, I'll go out like Jordan. I'll go out on top. Call it a career.
Well, Jordan didn't go out on top.
Well, true, he came back, but he did that round when he retired the second time.
Jerome Bettis went out on top. Jerome Bettis won the Super Bowl and said peace out,
right? But at the time when Jordan retired the second time, we thought he was going out on top, and then he decided to go play for the Wizards.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. He didn't go out on top. He actually came back, and it was a little bit cringeworthy,
and he shouldn't have come back. But by plan, the original plan was he was going out on top. That's what I meant.
You're telling me Aaron Rodgers doesn't want to come back and draft Kwame Brown?
No. I hope not. Yeah, Rodgers takes a couple of years off and comes back for the Lions. Like, yeah, I'll come back and play for Dan Campbell. He seems like a good guy.
I don't see him walking away, and at this point, I'm not so sure I even see him leaving Green Bay. It seems like he – I don't know.
What does it look like around him?
There is also probably the – there's got to be a little bit of intrigue, and it helps if you're at odds with management. But it's starting to feel like – because now all of a sudden I've caught him, like, complimenting, you know, like throwing a couple, you know, not over the top, but just little compliments, basically – you know, saying they're doing everything, you know. It's different than what it was, let's say, last year. I think if it would have stayed the same as last year, there has to be intrigue when you're a guy like Aaron Rodgers to want to do what Brady did.
Yeah.
There has to be.
And hey, I think that's where he was at.
I don't think there's any doubt. But I do wonder if that's changed now. Now he's the all-time leading, you know, now does he want to go down as the greatest Packer of all time? He just passed Brett Favre for touchdowns, right? So I don't know.
I think he's already got a pretty good argument.
Probably. But they've had some pretty good players.
Yeah.
Pretty good quarterbacks.
Pretty good, yeah. Favre, Bart Starr.
Yeah, pretty good.
It is a very interesting dynamic, and I thought it was also kind of funny last night. He was complimentary of Mike McCarthy, and I didn't think that relationship exactly ended great. But he brought
him
up a
few
times.
Well, he also
kind of
threw – didn't he make a comment like, if you could understand Mike McCarthy?
Yeah, yeah, the Pittsburgh – you know, him talking with Pittsburghisms in the headset.
Yes, and he's like, well, listen, I had to listen to Mike McCarthy, and he's not the easiest to understand.
Yeah. But he said that in jest. I mean, I knew what he meant by that. He was talking about – Yenzers and the dialect and all of that. But it also seems like he has a good relationship with LaFleur.
Oh, he was very over the top about LaFleur.
Yeah. Which is just interesting. But I thought it was funny when he was telling the story about when Matt got hired and saying, well, this system doesn't really have audibles. And Aaron was like, yeah, well, I got several years of experience, so I'd like to put some of that in there. Basically saying, well, it does now.
Yeah. And but the difference is Matt LaFleur was smart enough to say, okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. Could you imagine saying that to Ken Wisenhunt?
That's right, and that's why he's not head coach.
Yep.
I mean, that's smart to do that. I mean, that's the right play, but not everybody's equipped to do that. Like, they don't, you know what I mean? There's just some coaches that will be like, yeah, well, that's great. Well, I'm the coach now, and, you know, you're going to do things my way. And then see how that ends. I think there's plenty of examples. We know how it ends, poorly. Let's go to Andrew on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. What's up?
Hey, Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year. Comments,
one about Jordan, another one about Tom Brady. One, if I'm not mistaken, Jordan knew that he wasn't going to win another championship when he went to Washington. I think he said he just wanted to see what it felt like to play with another organization before he retired. And then the Tom Brady situation, the Aaron Rodgers, I think that everything is up in the air now in terms of people being quarterbacks retiring like Aaron Rodgers, because Tom Brady has set a new bar by leaving his team and going to win a championship with another team at his age. And I think it has reshuffled the deck on all levels. And with that, I'll talk to you guys later.
All right. Thank you, Andrew. Good call. By the way, Peyton Manning did it.
Peyton
with another
did it.
Team.
Kurt Warner almost did it.
A lot of the greats have, right? And I think there is a little bit of intrigue there, for sure,
yeah,
to go do it somewhere else.
Question is where?
Yeah.
Because the thing is, Tom walked into an organization that all they needed was a quarterback.
But you don't think Pittsburgh isn't there? Come on.
Yeah, could be.
Aaron Rodgers?
T.J. Watt, yeah.
You don't think Pittsburgh is the team to beat if they have Aaron Rodgers?
I think so. Yeah.
I mean, they're going to have to fix some things. I mean, they got to improve some things. But
got a run game. It's got Claypool.
That Cam Hayward guy's pretty good. So is that TJ Watt guy, and their secondary is pretty good, and he's got receivers. Deontay Johnson, I think, is a really good receiver, and so is Claypool.
Well, who's
– Freiermuth is a more than capable – seems like he's going to be more than capable tight end.
It does feel like, though, he is very big on playing with people he's comfortable with. That's why Randall Cobb's back in Green Bay, because that's one of his buddies and somebody he trusts. You know, Devontae Adams is, I think, going to dictate a lot of this, of, you know, what happens, because, you know, it does Devontae want to stay with Aaron, and can they work it out where they can both stay in Green Bay and keep that going? Or, you know, do they kind of talk and try and, you know, kind of like a Gronk and Brady thing, try and move somewhere where they both can go? Which, if you're Pittsburgh, I think you would take Devontae Adams, but do you have room for Devontae Adams? Could you make that work if that meant getting Aaron Rodgers?
I mean, if they get Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams, which I think would be a stretch, if they did, I mean, hello.
Mm-hmm. Be crazy. But it's like you said, it's a stretch.
It's a big stretch. What do we think of Najee Harris? Do we think Najee Harris is – there's a lot of hype, obviously, coming in. Pittsburgh as an organization has always been able to run the football. Is he the next guy?
Kind of feels that way.
Well, I mean, I know he is, but is he? I'm not asking you. Like, they've anointed him, but is he? How good is he?
I think he's pretty darn good. I mean, almost 1,200 yards.
Is he Dalvin Cook good? Is he Alvin Kamara? Is he the elite? Christian McCaffrey, Derrick Henry, is he in that elite group? Like, where can he be? What's his ceiling?
Well, I mean, it's hard to answer that after one season, but – With based on what I've seen this season, you know, he's been healthy. He's played in all the games. He's going to surpass 300 rushing attempts, 1,200 yards. I'd say that's a pretty darn good rookie year. And to me, makes me think, yes, he is going to be in that category. But, you know, they're still kind of want to see it again. Whenever I see a rookie come and have a strong rookie year like that,
you want to see I always follow up.
Show it to me again now that the league has a year of tape on you and they can try and figure you out.
Yeah, let's see the follow up. Because I think the answer is yes today.
But did you see
what does year two look like? And oh, by the way, everything would change with a quarterback that you had to fear throwing. I mean, think about that. I mean, Pittsburgh, you know, I mean, Ben Roethlisberger was not going to tear you apart. Like, you teams focused on the run. Like, it's not like – I understand it's not like Pittsburgh can't throw, but you know what I mean. Like, watch Roethlisberger. I mean, he's totally different. I know he's been there 18 years, but the last year and this year, my goodness, it's painful at times to watch him throw the football. Painful. So can you imagine if they had an elite quarterback? That also, to me, helps Najee Harris.
Yeah, no doubt. And I thought Ryan Clark's breakdown of him last night, you know, he broke down a play where you had both of the defenders coming right at him, and he basically just pinballed off of them and kept going. And just that's the skill that he has, that even if the offensive line doesn't, you know, do what they need to do, he finds the hole and he makes one if it's not there. And that's what the elite running backs do.
Back to wrap up Tuesday's edition of Darren Donick and Chase next. It could be saying goodbye to the FTs in Washington. They are set to announce a new name on February 2nd. So less than a month away.
Just in time for your birthday.
No.
After your birthday.
After. Be right after.
Yeah. But, you know, better late than never.
But the FTs still in the – put out there, I guess they've finalized – there's 8 candidates left. Have you seen the list?
I couldn't tell you what all's on it.
Armada?
Yeah.
Presidents? Brigade? Okay. Red Hawks?
Yeah, I've heard that one.
Commanders?
Mm-hmm.
Red Wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Defenders.
Mm-hmm.
That was our nickname in high school, our high school nickname.
The Washington Defenders.
Bryan Station Defenders. And football team. I will say this. I think we all laughed at the FTs. I think we laughed. And thought, how silly is that? But over time, I've kind of gotten used to it.
I have too. So do you think they really could go through this whole thing and have this big announcement just to announce that they're going to remain the Washington football team?
I don't think so, but I do think it's interesting that they still have them. They've whittled it down, and the FTs are still in it. And like I said, I don't really have a problem with it. I don't think it's going to win. I would say I have not seen it. Have you seen anything on the favorites or anything? I haven't. There's probably, I'm sure, a line on it. Who's good?
Was Red Tails in there?
No.
I thought
Red Wolves and Red Hawks. I think Commanders is probably the leader in the clubhouse. That's my guess.
Well, I just read from 4 hours ago, it won't be Wolves or Red Wolves.
Really?
CNN. Yep.
It will not be the Red Wolves.
Mm-mm. And now there's, did they leak it somehow?
Huh.
Admirals is apparently in there. I don't know. I mean, I think it'll be something along the lines of like Commanders or Admirals or Armada or, Defender. I kind of like Defenders.
Defenders would be awesome if they become the worst defense in the league and it comes.
Yeah, that would be good.
It was almost the Hurts, the Washington Hurts, because Jalen Hurts would have been the owner. Because if he would have been hit by all of that, he would have sued them, and maybe that they would have been named after him. After that crazy, I think. By the way, they need to fix their stadium. Like, that's crazy, that whole thing that happened. And by the way, nobody was hurt, right?
No. No, there wasn't. But that was crazy. But, I mean, did you see some of the people that fell leaning up against that?
Chase. Hmm. Yes. But guess what? A wall at a stadium is supposed to hold up anything.
It was a guardrail. It wasn't a wall.
Well, I know, but it needs to be a wall.
Yeah, well.
They'll probably wall it after this. True?
Probably. I just love how they all get up and just start hugging, giving Jalen Hurts a hug.
Hey, take a picture.
Hey, all right. I may have broken a hip, but can I get a picture?
Before I go to the hospital, can I get a pic? All right, that'll do it for our show today. We'll have another big one tomorrow. We'll start things off with Paul Feinbaum at 10:15. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. Continue to be safe. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. Stay tuned. Stillman & Company is next.
Hey, guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.